dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine, and maybe just a little bit more.
Welcome back. Welcome in, I should say, to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, special guest, Dr. Brian McCarty. Dr. McCarty, it's been a bit. How are you?
I'm doing great.
And it's good to see you.
You were just continuing from last week, welcoming people back.
Yeah, that's exactly.
That's a really nice segue.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for getting me off the hook on that. It is always good to see you. Before we start, my wife Terry is doing great. Knee is feeling well. Thank you so much. I know that, you know, I'm sure you wonder, right? You wonder what, you know, the people that you've operated on, how they're doing a couple months later. And, man, she's doing great.
That's great. I'm very happy for her. And that's why we do what we do. That's what makes it worth doing, for sure.
That's excellent. Hey, before we get into what we want to talk about, before we came in the studio, you were telling me about an event that you were at last night that you were really impressed with.
Yeah, I wanted to give a shout out to the Black Excellence Awards, which, to be frank, I didn't even know was done every year.
Every year,
One of our employees, the person who runs everything at Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital Surgery, Cassie Scaife, was honored last night as one of the healthcare recipients in this, which I can tell you is super richly deserved. She makes that place run so beautifully, and she's positive, and she's terrific and brilliant. And so I got a chance to meet her family and her husband, her sister, her kids. And man, what pride is taken here. They gave out 10 scholarships last night to these young, brilliant people who are working in the community, but also moving up in the educational line and planning to come back and help out. And it was really cool. You know, at a time when we all see, divisions among people seemingly in our country, which is based on unity, this was a great opportunity for people to see, hey, you know what? There's none of that. Like, there was no tension there. We were all there together. Everybody's pulling each other up. And I just wanted to make a shout out to the people who organized that event, the people who run these types of things to bring a positivity to the environment, to the community, and really lift everybody up. It was great.
I've heard about, I've not been to that event. I've been invited a couple of times with coaching. It's difficult. But I hear nothing but great things about how the event is run and how these kids, we really do have a bright future.
Yeah,
some of these, the future leaders of this city and this community are some of the kids that you saw last night. And you'll hear again about them in 10 years as they're the leaders of this community.
Yeah, it's terrific. So I would encourage anyone, Black, white, Hispanic, Chinese, you know, Asian, whatever, to participate in these types of events and encourage everyone to come together. You know, this is the time for us to sort of show our unity, I think. So anyway, I feel very honored to have been invited, and congratulations to Cassie Scaife, so richly deserved and really neat. So thank you for that.
Hey, let's get into the show. When we talk about some of the injuries, and we talk about some of the stuff that we talk about on this show, Jabari Parker, I'm nervous for him. I'm nervous for him if he can, first of all, focus and do what he has to do to rehab to try to get back again a year from now, because that's a really difficult process. And once you do it once, the thought of having to do it again sometimes is crippling.
Well, this is something, I was on the Big Show talking about the same issue because ACL reconstruction is one of my subspecialties. And, you know, we sort of introduced anatomic ACL reconstruction to this area, and it's become more commonplace, which is great. It's hard on two levels, okay? One is, what is the associated injury that made his reconstruction fail? Because, you know, you can have meniscus problems, you can have associated ligament injuries that were maybe felt to be okay, but now you have to wonder, were they? Was there a problem with the lateral ligaments in the knee? Was there a problem with the anterolateral ligament? Dr. LaPrade, who's out at Stedman Hawkins Clinic, did the revision surgery. He specializes in a lot of those types of reconstructions, so it makes me wonder if they were feeling that were the case. So part of it's physical. He's a young guy, you know, obviously super explosive, super talented, So I think from that standpoint, from a physical standpoint, he's got a pretty good chance of succeeding. The second part's psychological. When you've been out for a whole year as a young kid and you finally get back and you do all the right things and you do all the training and now you're back at a high level and then it happens again, it takes a serious toll on your psychology. So I'm very much hopeful, and I'm sure that they are, providing him with sports psychology, making sure his teammates are still in touch, you know, so that he can have some sort of positivity moving forward. It's a very tough situation.
Doctor, do you think it will be more mental for him than physical to try to get back?
I think it's going to be both.
Both.
I mean, you know, the odds are they had to go to the other knee to get a graft for this reconstruction. So there's that. You know, having a couple of knee surgeries like this, you lose a lot of quadriceps and hip strength. So, of course, they're going to be working on that. But, I mean, this is a lot of trauma for the knee to go through. But people often forget, also traumatic for your brain.
Right.
The confidence of him going into the lane like he did on that move and planting and pushing off of that, you know, he's going to have in the back of his mind, until he does it a whole bunch of times,
right.
He's going to have in the back of his mind that it's going to be an issue. I will tell you, I've been through this situation many times where we've had athletes with revision surgeries and we see them and we have to reconstruct them. And you know what? A lot of them, especially the younger ones, do really, really well. So it is very possible. But we're talking about he is at the tip of the iceberg of athletes in the world.
Right.
And that tip is very tight. And so, you know, even little changes in his anatomy, little changes in his explosiveness will impact his ability to be a superstar player. And that's, you know, we'll wait and see. I like this guy. I don't know him personally. I like his attitude. I like his body language. I think those things are positive for him. Seems to have a good head on his shoulders.
Right.
That really makes a big difference. But, you know, you look at Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose was the man.
He was
so incredible.
Man.
And, you know, he had one injury, came back, then he had another injury, and he's never been the same. And part of that's physical, I think. You start, part of it's psychological, but part of it's physical. He just doesn't have the same explosiveness.
How uncommon is that to have to tear the ACL again, same knee again like that? Is it really uncommon, or is it more common than we think?
It's uncommon, but not as uncommon as we'd like it to be.
Okay.
So the statistically, you'd say 2 or 3% of the time, it's slightly less common to tear the repaired knee than the other knee. So I see more people who injure their opposite knee with this than I do the reconstructed knee. Most, I can tell you from doing this for 16 years and having reconstructed several thousand ACLs, the ones who have the problem that re-injure it, almost all of them have an associated injury, posterolateral meniscus tear that couldn't be repaired, lateral ligament stretched that didn't seem to need reconstruction. There are other injuries that usually predispose them to having a problem.
We've talked about this kind of stuff for as long as we've been doing the Moss Show. And one of the common threads between all of it is when we talk about young student athletes, high school age kids, is there comes a point in the athlete's head that they're feeling great,
mm-hmm.
and they're ready to go, and doctors and trainers are pulling them back. We're in the middle of that at the school where I coach.
Sure.
Young man that tore his ACL a couple weeks before the season, and you know what? He's feeling great right now.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And he is smiling, and he's gotten the approval to do one or two drills with us.
Sure.
My fear is once our season ends, and we're not there to – you know, Ashley Groh, she's unbelievable, by the way, isn't there on a daily basis.
Your
athletic trainer at Martin Luther. Yeah. She is phenomenal. Yeah. She's a Mosh athletic trainer. But if we're not there to hold him back and he gets to an AAU practice and says, man, I feel great, and starts going, that's my fear.
Well, I mean, what you're talking about is the complex issue of compliance, you know, people following through. And I think this comes down to education. We spend a ton of time educating our patients about the importance of why it is that we tell them what we tell them. And I think that why is the thing. When I see people for second and third and fourth opinions, which I do a lot, the biggest complaint that they have is they never were told why they couldn't do X, Y, or Z, or why they needed to do a surgery. And I think, you know, most of the surgeons out there are really good about it, but some of them maybe don't spend a lot of time talking about that specific issue because it takes a lot of time. But the fact is, when people know why they can't do it, they're much more likely to behave themselves and do the right thing.
Right.
If they don't understand why, they just feel great and they go off. Now, I will tell you, high school group is difficult.
I know.
I mean, I've had some of my patients playing football in the parking lot, and the trainer calls me and is like, is he supposed to be doing that?
Yeah, of course not.
2 months after his ACL, you know.
So holding this young man back is difficult because he's a really talented, he's a good athlete, good basketball
player.
Yeah,
that's all the more reason to make sure that he understands why he shouldn't do those things.
Right.
And all you have to do is point to the NBA players and you show them, look, this guy's not going to be back for 12 months.
Right.
You know, the high school kids, we rarely keep them out that long because it costs them two whole seasons and that's it. You know, so we usually end up putting them back a little sooner. But the fact is, if you had your druthers, you'd keep them out for that whole year. I was just at the Sports Medicine Conference in Colorado, our American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons Sports Medicine Conference. And, you know, the biggest thing that they talked about are things we've been trying to preach for years about making sure that physically the strength, the agility, and all that stuff is actually tested before the kids go back. And they gave us some really interesting information about normative data. In other words, they take, let's say this player is 17. So they have normative data, all 17-year-olds, and where they ought to be at a certain point in their recovery. And if you test the guy and he doesn't come up in the 85th percentile, you tell him you're not playing, no matter how long it's been.
Right.
And that's a really interesting metric that we're going to start to use for helping athletes get returned to play.
Wow.
So that they know they have an objective guideline. It's not just the time. It's also their work in terms of getting their strength back.
Before we get to a break, Philadelphia 76ers. They just, yeah. You know, there's got to be a dark cloud over this this team. They've had injury after injury. Ben Simmons, first pick in the draft, will not play at all this year. And they thought he'd be back around the All-Star break, but they have now shut him down. And in the article that I'm reading, the Jones fracture in his foot apparently has not come close to healing yet.
Yeah, so a Jones fracture is a break in the fifth metatarsal bone. If you look at your hand and you look at the way outside part of your hand, there are little bones in the palm part of your hand. That's analogous to the fifth metatarsal in the foot. So that bone is a long bone. It has very poor blood supply in the middle portion of the bone. So a Jones fracture is in that specific area of the bone. What they did is they put a compression screw to compress the fracture to get it to heal. Same injury Kevin Durant had and tried to come back, and he didn't heal either. And so the healing of these things is tenuous. I've had a bunch of people with this over the years, some of whom went on to win NCAA championships in soccer, and you know they've done really well. But the healing is always the worry. So what's interesting about this story is not that they shut him down for the season. That's not the interesting part. The interesting part is they said he won't participate in summer league. So they're not talking about shutting him down for this year. They're talking about, or is he even going to be ready for next season? So this is a great segue into our conversation today, which is about biological augmentation of healing in orthopedics. In other words, stem cell research, stem cell injections, platelet-rich plasma injections, or PRP as people call it. That's the next phase of orthopedic surgery, is how do you make things heal more quickly and more efficiently? And this is a great segue because Ben Simmons is probably in the moment right now where they're talking about putting bone graft in there and putting some stem cells to try to get this thing to heal.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting topic.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We'll continue our conversation. He is Dr. Brian McCarty. You can go to mymosh.com for more information on him. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
You know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout, throw my hands up and shout, throw my head back and shout. Come on now, don't forget to say you will. Don't forget to say yeah, yeah.
It's the Isley Brothers.
Yeah,
welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. Like you heard, the Isley Brothers.
Hey, man, we're up and ready to go today.
We are up and ready to go. I was going to say Blues Brothers. That would have been a good guess,
it
right?
It was in the movie.
It was in the movie.
Yep.
I lived in an apartment on the east side, a guy across the hall. He was in a band called the Booze Brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
And they played all over the place, Matt. He was good. I went to go watch him play a couple of times. Thanks. I am Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty, from the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. Go to mymosh.com for more information on Dr. Brian. So, really interesting subject. And when we talk about stem cell, almost versed PRP is what we're going to discuss here today. You had sent me an article from 2012 that was really interesting. And the article is, the title is, Why Did Kobe Go to Germany? And when you read through the article, it really is a really interesting reason as to why he went. And he didn't want to talk about it. But he was a different player when he came back. And so the idea was to why he went to get his knee feeling better. And we're going to discuss some of the things that he had done back then that might be coming, that you guys get involved with now.
Yeah, we're really doing all these things. It's what's interesting and what's different about the way things are regulated in the United States and Germany. I don't want to get into too much detail, but the basic gist is this. There are currently biological agents that we can use. What does that mean? That means things from your own body that we basically are looking for the things that are highest in growth potential, and we can separate those out from your blood or from your bone marrow and then re-inject them into areas of injury to improve your situation. And so the first one we're going to talk about is what's called platelet-rich plasma, or PRP. And this is a very complex issue, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it on the show. There's a lot of marketing currently for people to have PRP injections. And so I wanted to sort of demystify the fact from the fiction and let people know what the realities are, and then if they are appropriate for such treatments, where can they get them so that they're done appropriately? Because one of the interesting things about this is that almost all of these things aren't covered by any insurance. And because they're not covered by insurance, they're expensive. And so before we would have our patients spending a lot of money on some sort of treatment like this, we want to make sure that it's appropriate for them and that they understand what it is that they're getting. So why did Kobe go to Germany? Because in 2012, there was a doctor in Germany who was doing a certain type of PRP injections that involved heating and cooling the plasma. So just to sort of lay the groundwork for this, the way this works is basically some blood is taken from your body, just really simple, basic little IV stick, and they take some blood that is spun down in a centrifuge. The centrifuge will separate out the different layers of your blood. So there are red blood cells, which are the parts that make your blood look red. There are platelets, and there are serum or plasma, okay? So the plasma separates out, the platelets separate out, and the blood separates out, the blood cells. Now, in this case, the part that's interesting to people is the layer called the platelet-rich plasma layer. Why? Because platelets, the parts of your blood that clot, for example, when you cut yourself, the platelets burst and they clot everything up. Well, they're full of growth factors. And so people forever have been very interested in, well, what happens if we take out a lot of these platelets and use them to try to heal an injury? And this is where the PRP, or platelet-rich plasma, idea came from. So I hope that's clear.
That is clear.
So then that layer can be taken and re-injected in areas where you have an injury. So certain areas, for example, tennis elbow is a good one for that. Golfer's elbow or medial epicondylitis. Jumper's knee can be treated this way. Well, turns out so can arthritis of the knee be treated this way. And that's sort of a newer area that people have become interested in. So it turns out that platelet-rich plasma injections in the knee, for example, or the hip, or even the shoulder, can have an impact on decreasing inflammatory modulators in the joint. So they can help to reduce symptoms from the arthritis. Now, here comes the complicated part. There are a whole bunch of different ways you can prepare this PRP, and there's not been very good standardization to say which one is the best. So you see the studies. Some studies say it does absolutely nothing. Some say it's like the greatest thing since sliced bread. And so how do you know which is which? Well, the Germany situation, they were heating it up to change the dynamics of what happens in the plasma. They were actually changing parts of the inflammatory cascade in the platelet-rich plasma. And it turns out in the United States, if you do that, the FDA considers that changing and making a drug, making a new thing, even though it's not really. That's what they consider it. And so the regulators in the United States won't allow people to do that at this point. So that's why he went to Germany. Now, you're ready for the second part?
Yes.
Well, there's a subplot to that, which is some people suspected that maybe this doctor was injecting more than just platelet-rich plasma.
Okay. What were they thinking?
Well, there's, rumors were that maybe he was adding a little human growth hormone, or maybe he was adding something else to the preparation. And the truth is, nobody knows. But, you know, when a 35-year-old guy comes back and he's jumping out in the gym, all of a sudden people start wondering how that happened. Now, I'm not saying that he is, because I have no evidence that that's what happened. But I can tell you that when we do PRP injections, for example, we don't necessarily see people suddenly acting like they're 17. So take that for what it's worth.
In this article, and this was written in 2012, so this is a while ago, but the second to last paragraph, it says near the end of this paragraph, perhaps, and again, this was in 2012, perhaps we're on the cusp of a revolution in sports medicine in which superstars find a way to extend their careers. Or maybe the injection of spun blood is just an elaborate placebo, a high-tech gimmick.
Yep. That's exactly right.
And that was 2012.
Yeah, so now we're in 2017.
Right.
So the use of these things has exploded because people are, the public is interested in utilizing the same things the superstars get, right? So people are willing to pay a lot of money to have these injections. My personal feeling is I wouldn't offer them until I had evidence that suggested that they could be effective for your particular problem. Now, that may sound obvious, but the fact is a lot of people are perfectly happy to do the shots if you want them and you're willing to pay for them. The downside of doing this is very low. This is your own tissue. So the odds of it doing you harm is almost zero.
Right.
So that's the upside. Now, the downside is I don't believe we are merchants of hope. I think we're merchants of fact. Okay. So we need to know kind of what we're doing with that. Now, 5 years since this, I've become convinced that there is a role for these injections for very specific problems. Why? Because there's very good evidence for certain types of things. Early degenerative arthritis, PRP injections can be better than what we have used in the past. Okay, so how much better? It's a difference between maybe 80% improvement versus 65% improvement. So it's not like one is a panacea and it cures everything and the other one's terrible, but it is better. At least in now several studies have shown that. So we are now offering these injections for that issue. Now, I can tell you, when I have this conversation, it's full disclosure. It's expensive. You know, it's not guaranteed to do anything, but it is on these studies, that, and there are now a number of them, that show that for early degenerative arthritis, it's probably better than the other alternatives that we have had in the past. Does it change the fact that you need to lose a little bit of weight? You need to keep your fitness. You need to do the bike all the time to keep your knee going. No, all those things are still true. But it adds another weapon to our arsenal. And I think what you're going to see over the next 5 to 10 years is two things. One, I think insurance coverage will become much more common because as these things become documented to be effective, insurance will start to pay for them. And then it becomes a much more easy thing for us to deal with. And the second thing is, I think you'll see that the science understanding exactly what's working and what's not working will get better and better and better. And so the efficacy of the treatments will get better. And that's very exciting.
That's really exciting. Before we get to a break, and this can be hopefully a short answer, how does insurance make the decision on what they'll cover and what they won't?
Well, in this case, they're not going to cover it until the evidence is really strong that it works. Frankly, I don't blame them. I mean, if you don't have good evidence for what you're doing, you can't expect an insurer to cover it.
Correct.
So as the studies improve in quality, as they improve in consistency, and it's clear which ones work and for what conditions, then I think the insurance companies will finally start to adopt them. But in the meantime, there is a lot of snake oil selling going on the internet between supplements and, you know, people saying they're injecting X, Y, and Z. I mean, the placebo effect's really strong. It's a real thing, and it's really strong. And we want to really avoid offering people things that are just fads. You know, I don't want to be looking back 5 years and go, geez, that was really a waste of time, and You know, because I feel like it's my responsibility to provide objective information to patients about what's best for them. If I wouldn't do it for me, I'm not offering it to them. Put it that way.
How long does something like, and again, this has been going on for a bit with people trying it,
yep.
but how long do you foresee something like this taking with research before insurance companies, somebody might say, okay, now I'm a believer?
I suspect it's going to be 2020, somewhere in that range. I just read this morning about a very nicely designed prospective trial. It means a trial that doesn't look back. It looks forward at the results that will be concluding in 2020. And if that trial is successful and it shows what we hope it to show, we don't really hope it to show anything. If it shows success for this,
right.
then I think you'll see a lot more approvals for this.
We're going to continue our conversation. This is really interesting to me, and I think it is to our listeners as well.
Yeah, I hope so. We're going to talk about
by the response I'm getting on my phone. It's really interesting.
We'll talk about bone marrow aspirin on the other side.
We will.
Very interesting.
Dr. Brian McCarty, you can go to mymosh.com for more information on him. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
You can get
Dr. Brian McCarty's awfully creative today. Jimmy Cliff, you can get it if you really want.
That's right.
And what a great lead-in. First of all, I got a text from my wife, Terry, your last song. She sent in a text, great song.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Which is
shocking
to me. But I did pick it.
You did pick it. And now he's sticking his chest out like he should be picking all the music here.
I should definitely be picking all of the music.
3 years ago, I picked one bad song, and he has banned me.
Yeah, it was really bad.
It was a good try.
It was really bad, Mike.
Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Dr. Brian McCarty, go to mymosh.com for more information. He does not have a music playlist on that website, but you can find out all about Dr. McCarty. Before we get into this, we're talking about family during the break. Congratulations to your sons.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, can you tell our audience a little bit just what the award they won?
Yeah, this is a little off topic from our sports program, but they won the Stanford Genius Awards for an idea called E Pluribus. And we were talking early in the show about an idea of uniting people instead
yes.
of separating people. And that's essentially what they are trying to achieve. So they don't have a place you can go check it out just yet, but I will keep you posted.
Stanford Genius
Award. Yeah, they're going to D.C. this summer, and they're going to they've been awarded a good chunk of money to start. They have investors who are interested in helping. And basically the idea will be to provide transparency at all levels of government and allow more citizen input as opposed to just, like, I don't know how many of us think we could actually find out what people are working on in the government or what their stances really are.
Good for them.
But they're going to help to provide that, I hope. And the hope is for us to see, hey, you know what? We're all in this together, and we should look at the things that we agree on more than the things that we disagree on. So
couple of Brookfield Academy graduates doing good work.
Yeah, they are.
You're proud of them.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And you should be. Good for you. All right, so let's get into what you can get if you really want it, and that's part of where we're going to take this stem cell. It really important to what you do, and a lot of research being done into that category as well.
Sure is. Yeah, this is an interesting phase. So for people listening, stem cells is a really sexy term that sounds like they could do anything. Like they're like the superhumans of
yes.
cells, right? And they kind of can. That what they mean by stem cell is when you are conceived and you're an embryo, all of your cells could do anything. So each individual cell has a full copy of your DNA, and in theory, it could turn into any type of cell. And this is really a magnificent thing if you think about it. So as your body develops, it turns into brain tissue, it turns into tendons and muscles, it turns into kidneys and pancreas and everything else. So the question is, can you still have some of these cells even when you're older? Can you use those cells to help to heal tissues or to help to regrow tissues? That's the question. The answer to that question is, of course, it's very complicated. This happens to be a topic that's been of interest to me forever because I have been interested in cartilage research for a long time. In fact, in the next segment, we're going to talk about a new cartilage resurfacing technique that we've been waiting for a long time that we're starting to employ. But in this segment, we're going to talk about these little cells that you can, remember how in PRP we were separating the platelets from the blood? In this case, we can separate some of the stem cells from the bone marrow, and you can use them, again, to try to help heal things. So when do you use it, and what does it do? First part is, what does it do? In the ideal world, these cells will turn into the tissues that are that they're adjacent to. So in other words, if you put them in at a fracture site, they should help to heal the fracture because they're pluripotential cells. They can turn into anything, and the area around that would signal the cells to turn into bone, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In the setting of an arthritic condition, like a cartilage defect, in theory, the area with low oxygen tension of the knee could help them to turn into cartilage cells. Now, where we're lacking evidence is, do they actually turn into cartilage cells? That we don't yet know. That's true. And that information is forthcoming. In terms of how effective they are, that's we're back again into the all over the board thing, where some studies show they're really great, some show they don't really do as much. To me, like everything that we do, it typically comes down to, what is the diagnosis for the patient? In other words, what's wrong? And secondly, what are the indications for stem cell therapy? So for very specific indications, I think stem cell therapy could be useful. Early degenerative arthritis that's not completely bone to bone would seem to be a possible treatment option for stem cells. This tennis elbow business or an unhealed fracture would be another area where stem cells have shown promise. Okay. Now remember, these are your cells.
Right.
These aren't coming from an embryo. They're not. So that means the older you are, the less active they are. Okay. And you have to keep that in mind, because a lot of the people who want these treatments are of course older. That doesn't mean they can't be useful, but you have to understand the cells are older. Someday, perhaps we'll have a line of cells that are all young and we can use them. We don't yet have that right now.
And as we get older, our natural reserve stem cells decline, correct?
They do. Yeah, the number of cells gets fewer and the activity of the cells gets fewer. So a good example for this is, you remember Dolly the sheep that
yes.
was cloned?
Yeah.
And this was a huge, it's really an incredible thing to clone an animal at that stage, a full sheep, and make it a new sheep. Well, one of the things they noticed right away is that Dolly aged prematurely. Okay, so why did that happen? It happened because as we age, there are things called telomeres in your cells that get cleaved off. It's like a self-fulfilling biological clock that programs cell death. Okay, and that those telomeres were already gone in Dolly. She had been cloned from an adult sheep. So when that Dolly grew up, she was already older, essentially, from her telomere makeup. The same thing is true of our stem cells. The older we are, they don't have the same DNA that the juvenile cells would have.
Does that explain why the healing process for people that are older is slower
yes.
than when they're younger?
Sure does. Yep, that's exactly why it's slower. And if you look at a newborn, they'll heal a broken femur, which is one of the hardest injuries to heal. They heal it in one week. It's totally healed. In us, it'll take 3-4 months. So it's very much a difference. And this is why, you know, research into the embryonic line is probably important, because people who have spinal cord injuries and things like that probably would benefit a lot from these. And I think in the end, that will occur. But we have to figure out a way to do that ethically. So that's been the trick here in the United States.
Hey, last question before we get to a break with you. We talked in the last segment and this segment on how studies differ.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that because the patient is different?
It's because of so many different factors. The patients can be different. The preparations can be different. The study design can be different. The vested interest is whether this guy's got right. some skin in the game here can be different. That influences the results.
Sure.
I look for things that are fairly objective and consistent, you know, and bone marrow aspirate is something that my partners and I are now offering to patients if they so choose to do that for very specific indications. It is very expensive. It costs over $4,000 typically. I would encourage people who are interested in it to go to someone who will give them an objective opinion. We've had a number of patients with terrible arthritis who've gone, spent $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 on these treatments, and they do absolutely nothing. And that's because you could have predicted they wouldn't have worked. And so if you're going to get them, talk to someone who's not vested in the thing to get objective information and see if it's a good option for you. And if it is, you can get it if you really want, as Jimmy Cliff once said.
This is a really interesting show to me. This lot of stuff going on, as always, in your business.
Yeah, this is from the time I started, I always knew the future of our industry was cellular. It's in the cell is the secret, right?
Yeah.
So we are really good at mechanical fixing, total knees and shoulders and arthroscopy, and I mean we do these things through these tiny little incisions. The next step is biological enhancement, and we're getting to the point where that's really exciting. As a matter of fact, on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about a new technique we've been waiting for called matrix autologous chondrocyte implantation. It's a way of resurfacing cartilage in focal defects. And I've been waiting for this for a long time because I was supposed to be part of the national trial 10 years ago, and the FDA shut it down for some reason. Now they finally approved it. So this is another thing that we can talk about on the other side. How to fix your cartilage, using minimally invasive techniques.
He is Dr. Brian McCarty. You can get more information on him. Go to mymosh.com. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Lost in the Crowd. Fantastic.
Negrito.
Negrito. Of course, that's who it is.
Yes, the Fantastic Negrito. They just won a Grammy, man. They won the Tiny Desk competition a couple years ago, and now they're famous.
You're lucky you got that song to him on time, because I had a Captain Tennille song all lined up. Yeah,
Muskrat Love.
It was right there, ready to go. He is Dr. Brian McCarty. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. This has been an extremely interesting show to me. So thank you for bringing this to us. So tell us about, you're excited about the cartilage thing that's going on.
Yeah, I kind of am.
I can't pronounce it, so.
It's called, we call it MACI, M-A-C-I.
That I can do.
Yeah, I figured you could handle that.
That one, what's the real name on it?
Well, you know that. It's matrix autologous chondrocyte implantation. So
Macy's a lot easier.
I'll break it down for
Thank you.
So for years, we've been doing a procedure that's technically complicated called autologous chondrocyte implantation. And just to make it simple, autologous means it comes from you.
Okay.
Auto means self, so autologous means it comes from your own self. Chondrocyte is the cartilage cell. It's the cell of the cartilage itself is called a chondrocyte. Implantation just means you're putting it in. So autologous chondrocyte implantation was pioneered by an incredible physician named Lars Peterson from Sweden, who I happened to work with when I was a fellow. And what we would have to do in the past is we'd have to go and take cells arthroscopically, grow them in a lab in Boston, have them shipped back, and then we'd do a second procedure where we'd open the knee, we'd suture a patch of the lining of the bone called a periosteum. So we'd have to harvest that, suture it over the top, and then inject the cells underneath, and then you could grow cartilage under this defect. So very effective procedure for treating a very specific problem. Again, this isn't all arthritis, but if you have like a pothole in the road where there's a hole in the cartilage and the bone is normal, this is a great technique. Now, the problem is really technically demanding, and it takes a lot of time, and the recovery is really hard. And so it was a difficult thing to do, and it took a long time to recover. Sometimes it would overgrow, so you'd actually get too much cartilage, and so there were issues with that. So 10 years ago, excuse me, when I was starting our Joint Restoration Institute, we were one of 15 centers that was supposed to trial MACI for the United States. And for some reason, the FDA said, oh, no, we can't do it, even though they were doing it in Europe for 10 years. And so just a couple months ago, we finally got approval for MACI in the United States. So what does that mean? Well, what it means is now we can do that same technique, but we implant it into a matrix that we can then kind of glue into place. And so there's already a scaffold there for the cells to grow into. So it's technically much easier and it makes more sense. Like, it's much more logical to do it this way than the way that we used to do it. And that means good things for our patients. It means more options for cartilage restoration, which is something that I specialize in and my partners at Mosh also are involved with. And so if you have a cartilage problem, particularly younger patients with focal defects from trauma or from, you know, what's called an OCD lesion, this can be a very effective treatment for that. It doesn't carry any risk of disease transmission because it's your own tissues, and it's very exciting. So it's finally come, and we now have our first few patients we're about to treat with it.
Still two procedures?
It's still two procedures, but that's typical because you need to have one procedure to assess the size of the defect and see if that's appropriate. It is a two-step process, but the first one's pretty easy. It's a scope, really quick recovery, quick turnaround. And then the second one is when we actually put the graft in and resurface the cartilage.
So we're not sending it to Boston.
We are. Yeah,
are,
no, we still send the cells off. And yeah, I used to do this in the lab when I was in high school and college. We take cartilage and you divide the collagen, get the chondrocytes, and you grow the chondrocytes. And so I've been doing that kind of thing for a long, long time. But to do it on a human level, to put implantation, you need a very specified lab. So that's why we send them to the company in Boston that does that for us.
Well, it's an exciting time.
It is.
You
know, there's a lot
of looking forward to this for 10 years.
Sure have. Yeah. And maybe 20. I mean, it's been slowly coming. And the most exciting thing in the future of this whole thing is the idea that you might be able to accelerate the healing process so that instead of it taking 3 to 4 months for a rotator cuff to heal in, maybe you could get it to heal in a few weeks. That's the most exciting thing. And that's still on the horizon. We're not there yet. But that's why you got to fund science. You got to learn and always be inquisitive and then be objective. You know, look at it, judge it. And if it makes sense and it's consistent, then you can use it. And that's what our principles are. So
I love when you come in studio. I always learn a lot of stuff.
I appreciate that.
It's really good to see you. Thank
you.
Yeah, you
too.
Excuse me, man. I lost
Mike's
it there.
Getting all choked up.
Getting all choked up.
I don't really blame him.
Because I'm not going to see you next week, Dr. McCarty. Thanks for listening. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.